from God. The blessing of the healing power of Jesus is there to perform healing. And it's interesting because there is a very specific reason that he heals the man the way that he does. Because really before he says anything about the physical healing he gives to him, he mentions he has power to forgive people of their sins. And really in this, we're also going to see, it really kind of piggybacks on a previous lesson, just a few verses before that, where Jesus is trying to instigate and cultivate a mentality of what it's going to take to be fishers of men. And we're going to try to link this miracle and see how it really gives us some practical illustrations of what it is that we need that we can boost in our zealousness and our determination to bring people to Jesus. It's always interesting to me that right off the bat, Jesus wasted no time. Anybody who showed any interest in Jesus and wanting to follow him, wanting to learn from him, he always made it very clear what the objective was. It was always to train you, and I and everybody who comes to Jesus. Right off the bat, you're going to learn how to be an evangelist. You're going to learn how to go out and bring people to me. That's what he's initially bringing people to him, to his cause, is to put that forefront of our minds. That's the key thing that we need to have, always looking for the opportunity, praying for the opportunity, seeking for opportunities, and to be willing to be effective in that. And right off the bat, one of the first things he would say to disciples is, I'm going to teach you how to be a fisher of men. And what we're going to see in this particular miracle is he really brings out some key elements that we need to have when it comes to being a fisher of men. Whenever I think about the idea of being an effective personal worker, effective in personal evangelism. Let's see, I don't know if I've got this. And you maybe think about having a tackle box of equipment that you would need to be effective in being a good fisher of men. A lot of things would probably come to mind. Things like, so they want to have courage. So they need to have the courage to actually initiate the conversation. A lot of people struggle with that. If people just kind of, maybe not even talk to people in general, but just to, you know, we start talking about sports, talking about the weather, talking about the job. And then try to get that courage to bring the conversation to spiritual things. What do you think about your soul? What do you think about eternity? What do you think about Jesus, the resurrection? You ever thought about these things? We need courage to do that. We also need boldness. We need a boldness to preach the truth as it is, to stand forth on the principles of the gospel. It is the gospel that saves people, and being bold to just preach nothing but the truth of the gospel. We need compassion. We talked about that last night. You need compassion. You need a willingness to see people in their sin and have a desire. Oh, boy, look at this individual. Not only are they hurting themselves, they're hurting their other people around them. Their families are in disarray. And how many things could help them if they got out of this sinful condition and wanted to have compassion to bring them to Christ? We need diligence. We need diligence. And to continually do this. But one of the key things that Jesus is going to point to, and he's going to show Peter first of all, and then kind of have a backup follow lesson, is how important it is that we have faith. Without faith, all these other components really won't do us any good. Because initially, Jesus is going to help us understand we need to have bold, diligent faith that the gospel works. And faith that taking those eventually those opportunities just to drop the seed. Faith that, hey, I don't know what's going to come of this. Maybe this person's going to reject me. Maybe they're going to call me names. Maybe they're going to laugh at me. I don't know. But it's worth taking the risk because I have faith that this seed has the power and the ability to change this individual. Now, whether or not that's going to happen, it's up to them and up to their heart and their reception to it. But a lot of times, I notice for me, a lot of times opportunities go missed because I need to build that faith. It's worth doing it. It's worth taking the time to just leave it in their hands. Whether it's the person I see passing at Walmart, the cashier. Am I doing anything to bring the nature of our conversation to something maybe we can invite them, persuade them, encourage them? But really the first time this comes up is in Luke chapter 5. So let's turn over to Luke chapter 5. And Jesus is going to help Peter recognize that he's going to challenge him and recognize that Peter struggles a little bit with this element of faith, just trust. that it's even worth doing it. In Luke chapter 5, we start reading in verse 1. It says, "Now it happened that while the crowd was pressing around him and listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, but the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he sat down and began teaching the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch.' Simon answered and said, 'Master, we worked hard all night and caught nothing, but I will do as you say and let down the nets.' When they had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish, and their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat for them to come and help them. And they came and filled both of the boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' feet, saying, 'Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man.' For amazement had seized him and all his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken." They did not believe anything like this was remotely possible. They were going to catch a few fish, let alone all the fish that were bringing in, that was breaking their nets and causing the boat to sink, bringing other people to come and help them. In other words, Peter reveals his skepticism. "I've done this all night. I'm a professional fisherman, after all. This is my trade. I know what I'm doing. And I've done it all night. And okay, I'll do it because you said so." But he doesn't believe anything's going to happen. And we talk about diligence, but really, the only way we have diligence in our evangelistic efforts is we have to have faith that Jesus is going to tell us, drop the net. Drop the net on this side. You work this side, okay, go the other side. Go north, go south, go northeast. Have we checked every possible door, neighborhood, business? Have we talked to every relative? Have we talked to... That's the idea. And sometimes it's easy for us to get discouraged. I fall into that all the time. Because when we have all of our efforts, we say, "Well, I've done this, and nothing much is happening." Jesus is always going to tell us, drop the net. He's always going to tell you, drop it on this side. And a lot of times we're that way. "I don't know if it's going to worth the effort. I don't know if I'm kind of tired of doing all this work and I'm not seeing the kind of results." And initially Jesus is testing Peter and saying, "No, this is why I had you do this, because I'm going to train you." Notice what he says when fear comes upon him. He realizes, I don't know if you want someone like me on your team after all, because I was kind of skeptical about this whole thing. I didn't really believe anything was possible. And notice what Jesus says. Jesus said to Simon, "Do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men." And so initially, this is the idea, is that he wants to give him the idea that it's going to be faith. And the reason why it's so important that we establish that in these few verses, because isn't it interesting, after he has to nudge Peter, after he has to kind of tell Peter, and Peter kind of is a little hesitant to even drop the net. It's a very simple thing. Just take the net, drop it, let it go, and see what happens. Peter's hesitant. Peter doubts. Peter doesn't know what's going to happen from it. A few verses later, what do we find? We find four men, totally unprompted. Jesus never told them to do it. They decide to drop something. It's not a net. It's a human being with a serious issue. Can't walk. And they are determined. And it's interesting because Jesus points to these four guys. He's just seeing their faith. And I have to believe when Jesus points to this man and he says the words before he even talks about healing him physically, he says, "Get up, take up your pallet. Your sins are forgiven you." I have to imagine him kind of looking at Peter, and Peter almost kind of getting the idea. "I think I know where you're going with this, Lord. Okay, you're training me that I have to have that kind of faith to be a fisher of men, because this is what it's all about, giving people the forgiveness of their sins." And here we see people willing to do whatever it takes to bring people to him. Well, initially, we are the ones who are going to be going out into the world who need to have that same kind of faith to drop the seed of the gospel, to drop the net of the gospel, and do whatever it takes to bring people to Jesus. And so he points to these guys, he shows them, he says, "Now look at these guys have something truly amazing. They have faith. And that's where our miracle, the central lesson here tonight, the miracle picks up in verse 17. In verse 17, it says, one day he was teaching, and there were some Pharisees and teachers of the law sitting there who had come from every village of Galilee and Judea from Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was present for him to perform healing. I love that verse. Realize any time like this, where there's teaching going on, you can count on that being true. There's power of the Lord to perform healing. Not physical, spiritual. Anytime this book is open, there is power from the Lord to perform healing. They realize that's what's going on. There's power from the Lord to perform healing. We've got someone who needs healed. We've got to bring him to where there's healing power. And it's in this place where Jesus is. So that's what it says there. Again, that's a very, very important verse, that 17. The power of the Lord was present for him to perform healing. And some men were carrying on a bed a man who was paralyzed, and they were trying to bring him in and to set him down in front of him, but not finding any way to bring him in because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and let him down through the tiles with his stretcher into the middle of the crowd in front of Jesus. And over verse 20, why does it say? It says, seeing their faith. He looks at this and he marvels at this and he's amazed at this. And he says, friend, your sins are forgiven you. And you can't help but see this parallel. Peter, the first sign of any hardship, I'm done. We're not going to do any more. These guys, I don't care how hard it is, we're finding a way. We're getting this guy to Jesus. I don't care if I have to get up on this guy's roof, tear a hole, which they do, start ripping stuff. They don't even ask permission. they take the initiative themselves. We're going to get this guy down in front of Jesus because there's power to perform healing. And that's essentially why Jesus points this, because essentially this is not only a lesson to demonstrate that Jesus has power to heal, yes, but something deeper than that. He has the ability to easily take people away from their sinful condition, to transform them, to heal them, to forgive them. But we need servants. Jesus is looking for individuals, disciples who have that kind of faith. That kind of faith of what these four guys had. To say, if I believe with all my heart and I know without a doubt that there's power from the gospel to perform healing, we just have to get it into the hearts of those who need the gospel. And that's really kind of the main, related issue of what this major miracle ends up being a bigger lesson to. Now, he points to faith, and that's really the key. He points to that idea that these guys have faith, and that's what he wants Peter, that's what he wants us to have. We need to have faith. And I'm very similar to the disciples. Anytime Jesus would say, well, you just need faith. You just need faith. You need to work on your faith. What was one of the common things that the disciples would say when Jesus would say, well, the problem is you don't have faith. What would be something they would always ask the Lord to do about their faith? You should be someone, can you make it bigger? Can you help me have bigger faith? Can you increase my faith? And it's always under Jesus where I say, no, you don't. I don't need to do that. Because if you have faith the size of what? A mustard seed, you can do anything. Faith the size of a mustard seed. In other words, if I have faith that there's power in something beyond me, bigger than me, all I need to do is do the next small little step that gets that power and connected with who needs to receive that power. In many ways, it's very simple. Because the power is not in us, and Paul reminds us the power was not in him, the power was not in Apollos, the power was in the seed. And they had to exhibit the kind of faith, trusting mustard seed faith. Turn over to Luke chapter 17. Luke chapter 17. This comes out. Someone go ahead and read that. If you have that, read Luke 17, 1 through 6.
Against you seven times in a day, it turns to you seven. apostle said to the Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, if you had faith like a grain of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you.
Interesting. I always love that. That's a challenge. And every time I think about it, I think, okay, if the key is faith, maybe that's the problem. I need bigger faith. And I always just, no. Now the problem is not your faith, because it can be very small. What you need to do is to be practical with that faith. In other words, the idea that the faith in not me, I don't have to have faith in my ability, faith in my speaking ability, faith in my persuasive ability. It's really just having the faith that the power is in the persuasive elements of the gospel. The gospel has the power to change people's hearts. And I just have to have that practical mustard seed faith. Just do the next, what's the next simple thing that I can do? Just maybe just hand somebody an invitation. Maybe hand someone a Bible. Turn to a Bible passage and say, I wonder what you think about this. Would you look at it? Would you read it? I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I have to have faith that if they just read it, if it comes to their consciousness somehow, it's got that ability. And I have to have the willingness to practically take the next small step to get there. There's a really neat story that I go to a lot, and I would share this with people. It's going to encourage us of what we're talking about. It really is what we see from the four men who brought the paralytic to Jesus. It was about them doing the next logical step. They're really just kind of small, insignificant steps, but they led to a big result. And whenever I think about faith the size of a mustard seed, I think about a little story that I came across when I was living in Worcester. And I usually say it's kind of, I call it faith the size of a red paperclip. When Beth and I got married, we were living in Worcester, Ohio, and we just bought a house. And I remember we had our office set up, and I got my computer set up, and I was checking the news. And I never forget, I come across this blog by this guy named Kyle McDonald, and he had a picture of a red paper clip. And he said, I'm going to take a red paper clip, and I'm going to use it to get a house. No money. I'm not going to buy it. I'm just going to trade it with a paper clip. I remember starting laughing. I told this, man, we're all big idiots. We just got this huge mortgage. All I needed was a red paper clip. So we started following this guy, and he just put this picture of a red paper clip. And this is what he did. He just took a picture. He said, anybody interested in trading me for a paper clip? I'll accept all trades, even in a house. And well, someone called him and they said, well, we've got a pen shaped like a fish. We'll trade that for it. So he traded that to these girls. And so then he took the picture of the pen shaped like the fish and he put, well, I'm sorry, I'm a little too jumpy with this thing. And this woman said, well, yeah, I could use a pen shaped like a fish. I sell ceramic doorknobs. So she traded that for that. And it kept going bigger and bigger and bigger. And it started getting even really insane. People were kind of amazed how far he was going with it. At one point, he had an offer for, someone was willing, put up a recording contract. One woman, she said, well, I'd like to take that recording contract. I'll offer 1 year's, 1 year's free rent in my apartment. And a lot of people were saying, okay, you got to stop there because there's no way you're going to get a house. And he kept trading up and trading up. And at one point, he actually had a snow globe. He said, I'm entertaining any offers for this unique snow globe. And it just so happened that the actor Corbin Bernstein is an avid snow globe collector. And he said, well, I'm making a movie. And I'll offer one speaking role in my movie for that snow globe. So he got the snow globe. And the offer was, anybody want a speaking role in a movie? And there was this woman trying so hard to get into Hollywood. Said, I'll give you my house. And so there's where Kyle MacDonald lives. And there's the little insignia of his paperclip of what he got the house for. And this guy is one of the most optimistic, encouraging people. He goes on speaking engagements all over the place. And he tells people, it's amazing what faith the size of a red paperclip could do. And he tells people, because sometimes when we think these enormous goals we have to achieve, and really it's about doing the next little step. Just having the faith that if I just do the next right thing, eventually we'll get there. When Jesus says, I want you to talk about faith the size of a mustard seed, that's what he's saying. He said he can use ordinary people like us to do ordinary, simple things every day that eventually takes this powerful message and transforms sinners. But the key is, do we have faith? That's why it was so important. important what these guys did, because they were just doing the next right thing. Okay, get him to the house. Oh, I can't get to the house. There's no room. Can we get up on the roof? Oh, yeah. No problem. Let's get up on the roof. Can we lower him? Yeah, just tear some things in the roof. Lower him down. And there, behold, Jesus does the healing. But isn't that interesting that Jesus pointed to them? He said, seeing their faith. Because initially, this is a lesson to try to train Peter and the others and say, this is what I'm talking about. You need that kind of faith to allow my power to perform its healing on the lost, sinful world. And that's what we need to strive to do. And so whenever I think about that, I think, well, what is faith the size of a red paperclip look like? Well, it looks like this. It looks like people who bring paralytics to Jesus. Maybe not physical paralytics, but there are spiritual paralytics. You know how in the book of Ephesians, you know, the key image of the book of Ephesians is walking. It talks about people who were dead in their sins, who were raised up to walk in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. The rest of that book is about how you walk, how we're able to walk. But we once were dead, no life in our spiritual legs. And so this becomes a great image of that's exactly what Jesus wants you and I to do. And the question is, are we bringing paralytics to Jesus? In other words, are we looking for those worst case scenarios of someone just no spiritual life in them whatsoever? But actually having the kind of faith to say, well, Jesus needs them. Jesus wants them to hear. Jesus wants them to consider this. Do we have the faith, the kind of a mustard seed, just do the next right thing and just see what happens? And that's what he's talking about. So I guess the next question is, well, how do I have that kind of faith? How do I have that kind of faith? Well, first of all, I think you need to realize that the kind of power that Jesus has is perfectly suitable for paralytics. In other words, his power is designed to truly reach out and truly transform worst case scenarios. I notice for me, I don't know if others maybe have this issue, maybe when it comes to evangelism, and we sometimes maybe start cataloging in our mind, who would be a good candidate for the gospel? Who maybe is already pretty close, and I just need to talk to a few things, and maybe they'll be close to being a member of the church, being obeying the gospel. But really the idea of the sower is, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you've done. I don't care how long you've committed the sin. I don't care what's going on. You're going to hear the gospel. Well, the interesting thing is that Jesus constantly shows it's typically the worst case scenario types of people that the gospel is perfectly suited for. It's a perfect combination that they, when they hear it, they respond. But we looked at Luke chapter 4 last. I want to look at it again. And if someone goes there to Luke chapter 4, someone go ahead and read that. Someone read Luke chapter 4, verse 16 through 19. Luke chapter 4, 16 through 19. Listen to the types of people he says he was sent to preach to. Verse 18, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, to the destitute, to the lowliest of the low. They are the ones that the gospel is really designed to reach them. Now, yes, it reaches them, but it reaches people like Cornelius, someone who was pretty close. He was a righteous, just man. He prayed to God, always gave alms. Yeah, he was a pretty good guy. But specifically, the gospel is designed for the destitute, he says the poor, the horrible situations, the recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed. Note verse 19, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. That favorable year of the Lord, that's a reference to the most favorable year was the year 50. What happened every 50 years? Wasn't that the best year of the Lord? Every seven Sabbaths? Year 50, year of Jubilee. What happens in the year of Jubilee? It's Leviticus 25. Pretty cool. All prisoners are set free. All slaves are released. All debts are forgiven. Well, who's that designed for? People just owe a little bit? Yeah, they get some blessing with that too. But if you owe a lot, if you become a slave because you couldn't pay off your debts, guess what? Your debts are paid off and you're no longer a slave just because it's year 50. Pretty cool. All property returned to original owners. So when Jesus says, I have come to proclaim the gospel for these types of people, translate that to our common culture. It literally is people who are just dying in life. People who could use a break, use a message of freedom, of restoration, of releasing me from the situation I'm in. And that's just, which is why, again, why does it take faith? Because oftentimes it's so hard for us to see, how is this even possible? But remember, I love something that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. Because the question becomes, who are we targeting and who are we ignoring? Remember what Paul said about typically in his experience, what were the kind of people that were responding by and large to the gospel? He said, you'd be shocked. It's not the rich. It's not the well-to-do. It's not the people who have everything together, who are clean, or the kind of nice people overall. It's the people that are an absolute mess. These are the people that were responding to the gospel because it's specifically designed to give hope to someone in that condition. Now, we all are in that condition, regardless of our sociological standpoint, whatever money we have, whatever problems, we're all lost. We're all sinners. But those who could easily see it, that's why he says, for consider your calling, brother. There were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. So when we think about the sower, and he said, the people with the good ground were the ones that were producing fruit. Well, what's good ground? Jesus tells us what good ground is. What's good ground? Well, he says, Luke 14, verse 21, after so many people were rejecting the message, he said, go out at once into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in here the poor and crippled and blind and lame. The question is, why? Many times are they not being brought to Jesus? Why are paralytics being left alone and not in massive droves being brought to Jesus? Faith. He says, seeing their faith, they brought a paralytic to Jesus. And that's what he's trying to show Peter here in that lesson. Was when I tell you to drop that net, you just have to have that mustard seed kind of faith. Don't worry about what's happened in the past. Don't worry about who all in your experiences has or has not been responding. You need to continue always and without prejudice. Everybody and anybody, but maybe even perhaps especially those it's very easy for them to see that maybe there's some light at the end of the darkness in their tunnel. But that's what Jesus says. That's the good ground. And that's why we need faith. So initially, this becomes a lesson to challenge us and say, do I have faith as an evangelist, as a fisher of men? Well, if I do, I'll be bringing paralytics to Jesus. In other words, those who spiritually are dead. In other words, when you look at their Facebook account, there's nothing spiritual going on that page. They're dead. And something else he says, and notice that they are usually unhindered by the obstacles. Because typically, people like that, there's always obstacles. It's never easy. It's never just, oh yeah, I want to be baptized. Usually you have to be diligent, right, to overcome whatever obstacles they put in front of you. And there was this major obstacle, but they could care less. We'll get around that. We'll figure out a way. We just have to get them to Jesus. And when we have that kind of trusting faith and the power, that's what we're going to look like. That's what we're going to do. And again, I let's go over to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 2. Someone go ahead and read that. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Ephesians 2, 1 through 3. Anybody who has it, just go ahead and read that. So in other words, before there was a congregation of Christians in Ephesus, the people who were Christian serving were described this way. And in my mind, I just kind of to bring it current. I always use Facebook. Facebook seems to be the cultural pivotal point, reference point. What kind of things would you suspect that would be people talking about, engaging in their conversations on their Facebook page that would be described as people who are dead in their trespasses and their sins? That are corrupt according to the way of the world, that are walking by the way of Satan. And the question is, when I see that, do I have the kind of faith to say, well, maybe it's an opportunity to drop some seed? Or is it, well, they're not really the kind of people that I could see maybe might be interested. Again, it's challenging. But really, that's, in essence, why Jesus heals the man in the way that he does and why he says what he says. Because he wants us to take the power of the gospel that has the power to heal these types of people. And it's going to take faith on the part of the evangelist and the Christian to bring them together. And again, we just have to be willing to overcome those obstacles. Turn over to First Thessalonians. I can only imagine the obstacles that had to have been in the way of the people that lived in Thessalonia who made up the church there. Someone read 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, and someone read verse 8 through 9.
For the word of the Lord has sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and Achaia,
yeah,
but also in every place your faith toward God has gone forth, so that we have no need to say anything. For they themselves report that us what kind of reception we had with you.
Said what they turned from idols to serve the true and living God. And one thing I know, if you just look at just a general idea of what people who served idols like, pretty messed up sexual moralities that they got to live. Because usually there's always a temple full of the way they worship those idols. But just one final example I use just to kind of encourage me to do this. But just to overcome these obstacles, I think of that there was a great example. Another preacher was preaching a lesson kind of similar about this. And he said it always kind of inspired, encouraged him to kind of up the ante when it comes to having trust and faith. Just see what happens. He said there was an elderly woman who was living in an apartment complex who was a Christian. And down the road or down the hall was like this young kind of rock band just kind of starting, playing pretty crazy music all hours of the night. Kind of one of those typical scenes out of a movie. She's rolling in her wheelchair down the hall, just knocking on the door. Kind of the people who are going to open the door kind of expect maybe to hear someone chastising them to keep the noise down. But that's not what she was knocking on the door for. She said, I hear you guys are here quite often. She said, I don't know if you guys be interested or not, but I have a Bible in my apartment, and I'd be willing to have a Bible study with you guys. And said that the lead singer turned his back to the drummer and said, hey, she wants to have a Bible study. What do you think? He said, sure. All right. So they all started having Bible studies with her, and all the members of the band became Christians, and the drummer is a preacher somewhere. But what I always think about, but this woman, you're talking about overcoming obstacles. Generation gap, her physical limitations. But that's what these guys, that's why Jesus marveled at their faith. They didn't care what they had to do. They didn't care what the obstacle was. And that has to translate into us to be useful for his purposes. Because ultimately, when we bring paralytics to Jesus, we will be unhindered by the obstacles because we ultimately see the powers in the net. And the net that he wants us to drop down, that is, forget it, whoops. The net, Matthew 24, 14, it's the gospel of the kingdom. It has the power to transform, to save, and to forgive. So that's, we'll close our lesson on that note, but just truly amazing. We take that image and translate that into what we need to be effective.